All right, welcome to Highly Questionable. We got Izzy Gutierrez on one side. L. Duncan put on a super professional face right before we said we were going to say hello. Like she's...
Stay tuned for what's going to be an enthralling 30 minutes of sports content.
Are the Bucks doing the right thing by giving Coach Bud a three-year extension?
Oh, man, this is one of those things. We were going through the postseason like, yo, Coach Bud looks like he stinks. And then the Bucks won the championship. So Mike Budenholzer had 1 year left on his deal. You typically prefer not to have your coach be a lame duck in that situation. And so now he's gotten a three-year extension. And it's kind of one of those things you just have to do, right? Like, they did win a championship. Now, granted, other people lose their jobs after winning a championship. There's all kinds of players who don't wind up coming back. But you really have no other option. It really sounds crazy when you think about it. Look at the regular season success that Budenholzer has had since he's been there with the Bucks. Everything that's on a piece of paper he can point to and say, no, I've been getting this done. Do any of us feel like they're better off because they have him versus some coach they could find? Like, he's not worse than anyone they could get off the street, but you could probably get somebody better. But it doesn't matter because he's championship coach Budenholzer now.
Coach Bud gets a lot of flack. And I will say, like, when he was in Atlanta, he was really good. When he, obviously, with this team, regular season, really good. And I think, obviously, what you look at is the entire picture. And a lot of people want to make that instant sort of reaction to a coach not maybe responding within a game or maybe taking a little bit of time to respond within a series. We're talking with Coach Bud a couple of years, a few years situation, right? Last year, getting knocked out by Miami. That's something that you do not recover from. There's only one way to recover, frankly, and that's winning a championship. And he did that. And with what he had to work with this team, he took full advantage. He used Drew Holiday the best way you can use him for his defensive prowess up and down the court, and obviously every once in a while making plays offensively. Down the stretch, putting the ball in Middleton's hands and Drew Holiday's hands instead of Giannis. That was something that maybe his sort of knee injury dictated a little bit more than Bud did, but still, it worked out. And so I wouldn't want to be the organization that hadn't won a championship in 50 years, finally wins one and says, hey, we're smarter than this. Let's fire this coach and move on to another one. So, yes, they had to do it, but it also sort of dismisses the things that Coach Bud did. And he did do enough things to win with the team that has one superstar, not a big three, not a super team, one superstar. And he should get credit for that.
I've obviously been a critic of Coach Bud, too, because of my ties with the Atlanta Hawks. And I will say, playing devil's advocate, he was. When we talk about sort of his inefficiencies in the playoffs, how good of a regular season coach he was, but his resistance to change or adjusting or adapting at all, he was trying to win, you know, despite being the number one seed a few years back with the Hawks. He was trying to win when his best player was like Paul Millsap. Okay, so to Bo's point, I think this was the right thing, the appropriate thing to do. I'm not sure it's the right thing to do. This sort of reminds me of the Ravens, right? With Joe Flacco. It was the appropriate thing to do to extend the man. He had just won them a Super Bowl, but did anybody think back then that Joe Flacco was going to lead some sort of dynastic run for the Ravens? No. You just sort of had to do it, right? I think that Bud, at the very least, showed an ability to be a little bit more malleable this postseason, to Izzy's point. So yes, like, if he had more than 1 year left on his deal, I'm actually not sure that they extend him. But to your point, he had the 1 year left. But to me, the thing that's so bananas about this entire thing is all of the chatter about how he was on a hot seat, and if they didn't make a very, very deep run, in fact, like a finals type of run, he was going to be fired. And to think that if Kevin Durant had worn a smaller shoe, or if Trae Young had just not stepped back, he could potentially have lost his job. Nonetheless, these things happen, and now he's extended through the foreseeable future, along with a Bucks core that is going to be intact for at least the next two seasons. Looks like they could go on another run.
Or if Kyrie Irving hadn't gotten hurt. Like, you make a good point. They won a championship with one superstar. They didn't have to play any teams that had two. Like, you could say the Nets, but that James Harden that was out there was not a superstar, right? James Harden. That was one-legged James Harden. I give them this. This was their year. This was the best chance they were ever going to have to win it, and damn it, they did.
Does it feel like the end for Serena Williams?
All right, so Serena Williams will not be playing at the U.S. Open. She had a hamstring injury. That's why she had to retire at Wimbledon. That's still messing with her. Serena Williams also turns 40 in September. Now, is this the end? That feels like a damning thing to say about Serena Williams, just because, hey, man, anytime I feel like I say somebody as good as she's been is at the end of anything, they come pop back up one more time just to make me look like a sucker. I understand that. But you look at this, Roger Federer, around the same age, and it's looking like his body is broken down on him. We've seen Rafael Nadal around this same age, his body breaking down on him. Nobody can beat Father Time forever. The thing about Serena Williams is the first time I said that was like 10 years ago, and she kept the whole thing rolling. But now it's just too much to ask, I feel like, of her or anybody else to just keep regenerating like an X-Man after every injury and then come back and look as good as we saw him be before.
Yeah, the reason I think that people aren't saying that about Raj and Rafa every single time they pull out of a competition or lose is because they have in that sort of span won a major title, right? So they're like, oh, there's still something in there. And I get it with Serena. It's been 4.5 years since she won anything major. I think in that span, since she had her daughter, she's only won some middling sort of mid-level tournament, right? But it feels like we are always so quick with these great, incredible stars to say, is this the end for them? Because while she has not met Serena-like standards, she still made it to a bunch of semifinals. She's still been in these things. She's had to withdraw because of injury. Bo, Izzy, did you guys really think that Tiger Woods was going to win another major? He won almost 11 years between them, right? Did you think he was going to win, A, the Tour Championship and then go on to win the Masters the next year? I get it. Golf is very different than tennis when it comes to what your body needs in order to perform at its highest level. But I hope that if she is not done, if she keeps coming back, I hope for God's sake, it is not in pursuit of just what we want her to do, which is break Margaret Court's record. I hope that she is not concerned about her legacy as it compares to someone who is now more known for being a bigot than any of her tennis accomplishments. Serena, you have nothing left to prove. So if you want to come back, God, I hope it's because you really want to and not because you feel like you need something to check that box.
To me, it just doesn't, like, I understand what you're saying there, Elle, but it also feels like it just feels better if Serena does win it, right? So that we never have to really mention Margaret Court again, because we all know that Serena is the greatest tennis player that we've seen. And so it just feels like it's the right thing. Not saying that she has to, not saying that that's something that she should just take all her focus on and just accomplish that one feat. However, it does feel like she would still want to do that, right? It feels like it's a Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson situation here where you can just put all your energy into one tournament and just try to win it and then get that off the checklist. Whether it be Wimbledon where the points are a little shorter, the US Open where she's a little bit more familiar and will definitely have the crowd there, I think that's got to be the target for her. And I don't know what her leeway is in terms of scheduling, what she can and cannot play, but pull the Serena card as many times as possible, play in that one last Wimbledon, win that one last Wimbledon, and then retire with that record because it just feels like it's supposed to happen.
Yeah, but when is that going to stop, though, Bo and Izzy? Because she would have to win just a tire. So then she didn't want another one in order to break the record? Like, it's, when does it stop for Serena? How much more do we think she has left in her when we're chasing this Margaret Court milestone?
Now, that's a good question. I do know this, though. I don't think there's any way in the world that she's going to let us watch her out here suffering, right? Like, we're not going to see her breaking down. It's not going to be some equivalent of Willie Mays playing for the 73 Mets. We're not going to see that. Like, I just have a hard time believing that she's going to give anybody the satisfaction of seeing her be finished. She's going to make that decision herself.
What do you make of Nerlens Noel's lawsuit against Rich Paul?
All right, so you may remember at one point, Nerlens Noel was playing for the Philadelphia 76ers, and it looked like they weren't going to keep him, and so he gets traded to Dallas. Dallas offered Noel a 4-year, $70 million extension, which he did not take. On the advice of his agent, Rich Paul, he decided to do something that very few people do. He played out the year on the qualifying offer so he could be an unrestricted free agent, expecting all this money to come in, and the money ain't come in yet. It has been minimum contract after minimum contract. Well, now, this offseason, Noel signed a 3-year, $27 million extension. First time he's gotten anything close to real money. But he had a 1-year deal last year with the Knicks, and he has not paid commission on that to Rich Paul. And we find out why. Because he mad. He feels as though in this course of the time between 2017 and 2020, that he missed out on $58 million in earnings because of advice that Rich Paul gave him. Now, look, I don't know enough about being a player or being an agent or any of these things to understand whether or not this is something that you can actually sue for. However, it does look bad for Rich Paul that it got to this point. And the big question you always have to ask yourself when you have an agent is, how important am I to him? Because he can't treat everybody the same. The care and detail that he gives LeBron James, he's not going to be able to give to a dude like Nerlens Noel. I just feel bad for him because literally nothing in his career has gone the way that it was supposed to, and he's actually a pretty good player.
I've never seen an episode of Ballers, but this feels like something that would come out of an episode of Ballers, because Nerlens Noel met Rich Paul at a party. And he had already had an agent named Happy, by the way, a man named Happy Walters. And so he had that $70 million offer from the Mavericks and turned it down and bet on himself and fired a man named Happy. Okay, fired Happy Walters, and then after a thumb injury, lost the bet on himself. And anybody on the outside looking in would say, okay, he probably didn't have the foresight to take those $70 million, to, you know, look at the league and where it was and say, hey, maybe it's not the place for big men. All it takes is one injury, and, you know, me betting on myself is a bad bet. But when you hear the quotes that Rich Paul or his agency was not taking calls from other teams and was literally leaving money out there on the table, he mentioned a couple of other players, Norris Cole and Shabazz Muhammad, as sort of lower level players who weren't really getting the attention of their agency. So I don't know, like you say, Bo, I don't know if you can sue over this, but it does seem like a bad reputation for Rich Paul to get, you know, to start growing, that he doesn't really pay attention to the smaller players and leaves them with money out there and only pays attention to the big name players. That's not a reputation he wants.
Oh, no. Oh, so that's revelatory, Izzy, that like someone would focus on the guy that helps net him like $100 million a year instead of the one that helps net him $200,000 a year. Come on, you guys. You can't sue for this. This isn't set. Like, listen, I feel bad for Nerlens. And yeah, it was probably terrible, terrible advice. They are called advisors, not enforcers. They do not force you to do anything. They advise you. And you then, as a grown-up, makes a decision. You took a gamble on yourself and it did not work. Go talk to Dennis Schroeder. You can't set this kind of precedent. What? So Dennis Schroeder's going to sue his agent if it doesn't work in Boston and he doesn't end up getting any money after he turned down that lucrative comp? He's not the first person to get bad information. You let someone court you at a birthday party. That was your first problem. You guys are in this industry. Whenever people start popping up and doing a little bit more, Bo, you're all over HBO now. I'm sure the agents are circling the wagon. That's how it works. It's up to you to decide what's the best situation for you. I mean, what's next? Like, you're going to have a bunch of mad, bitter women suing Steve Harvey because they read Think Like a Man and they're still single? Of course you shouldn't make them wait a certain amount of days. Like, you're going to sue Tony Robbins because you didn't actually live your best potential life? Like, this is stupid. Come on.
All right,
you cannot sue for these kinds of things. You got bad advice and you listen.
Hold on. The bad advice part, I'm with you all the way on that. But this, you ain't been calling people back that wanted to give me money. I don't know if you can sue for that, but if I'm an agent, I actually might prefer if they can sue for that, because if they can't sue for that, that's when they show up with things to your office.
Right.
Up next on HQ.
I grew up, my dad worked at Velda Farms and MacArthur Dairy, a proud milkman. We had these crates all the time in the house, more than we had any idea what to do with. Thank God nobody came up with this when I was a kid, because I can guarantee you I wouldn't be sitting here, at least not with this.
It's time to play the game that's a little bit rusty, but it's definitely going to nail this head nod. See? No. It's always left first.
Yeah, you tell us what's on TV. We'll tell you if we're intrigued. What a letdown.
Streaming online, Club Shay Shay.
All right, this is Shannon Sharpe's podcast. He had Allen Iverson on. Friendly reminder that Shannon told me that he would have me on that podcast next month. In 2020.
Ah. Not being cocky, not being arrogant. I know that I would have been a better player in football than I was in basketball. And that's not disrespecting basketball guys. That's not disrespecting the game that's done so much for me. I mean, I'm a household name. I'm a Hall of Famer in that sport. But football was my first love. And at the same time, Shannon, you know, if I would have had to get on the gridiron, then I wouldn't have never stopped lifting weights after high school. You know what I mean? So you would have seen a whole totally different physique. I might be looking like you or something.
Yo, him talking about the weightlifting took away what I was going to say, because the greatest Allen Iverson quote ever about why it is that he did not lift weights, because them things was heavy. that does not to me portend the guy that was really gonna be out here trying to play that football like that. Izzy, are you intrigued?
I mean, absolutely. What do we call out Allen Iverson? He was pound for pound the best player maybe ever. So would he be a great wide receiver? Of course he would. He was a great high school football player. And like the guy today that I look at and say, that guy would be an amazing wideout if he were, Ja Morant. I would love to see that dude on a football field just catching everything up in the air. That's kind of the closest Allen Iverson comp to me right now.
Al, you intrigued?
Well, yeah. Didn't Allen Iverson dribble a football? I'm pretty sure that's something that he did. I would watch that man do just about anything. But I will say this, because from everything that I had read, like through the stories over the last few years that talk about sort of the lore and this you know, this mythical proportions of who he was as Mr. Football back in Virginia, a lot of people thought he was trending towards corner. And I don't know. When I think of like who AI is and what he means and what he represents for the culture, I don't see that coming from the cornerback position, right? Like it's prime time and then everybody else. And so I think that AI played exactly what he was supposed to, although I would have watched him play football too.
That dude in that same interview was talking about all the names that he was calling Michael Jordan when they played in that game where he crossed him over, all of which is to say, nah, he sounds like an NFL corner to me. All right, that is our show. Izzy, still in that office. Me, still can't come up with nothing else clever to say about it. L. Duncan, check her out on the 6 o'clock Sports Center.
And Bo on the right time.